Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello and you're very welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, here on Joe, together with Guinness. How are you, Trimby?
Oh, brilliant.
Brilliant.
Oh, brilliant.
Sunday evening, we've got a cup of tea, kicking back.
Yeah.
I had a lovely weekend.
What'd you do?
I watched a bit of rugby and then I went for pints last night and then I went to a gig in Dolan's in Limerick to see a band called Talos. They're from Cork. They are absolutely unreal. Check them out.
Really?
Yeah. A guy called Owen French used to play for Sunday as well, apparently. We got tweeted today. He was supposed to be a brilliant rugby player.
Is that right?
He's the lead singer and writer and all the crack and he's brilliant.
Yeah.
I actually took Tommy Bowe with me.
Oh, yeah, he was at the game, yeah.
And we met Jenny Murphy there as well, so it was a little bit of a House of Rugby reunion without yourself.
Yeah, it sounds like you're kind of up to something. Yeah. Don't tell Trimby, we're having a meeting in Limerick.
In Limerick. You wouldn't come to Limerick anyway, would you?
No.
Yeah, so I had a good catch-up with Tommy, a good few pints with him, he's in great form. Did you see the coverage of himself, Donners,
and
Murray Kinsella and Eddie O'Sullivan.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't realise Eddie O'Sullivan was that small. Yeah. I don't think anyway. He looked so funny, man. He was literally half the size of them. It was like in Lord of the Rings when the little guy with the hatchet, Gimli,
he's beside Orlando Bloom.
He's like, my axe. Every time he kept looking up at Donners, that's what he's going to say. And my bow. But yeah, that was probably one of the best parts of that game.
Yeah, what about Kinsella? Has word got back to him that he's the Bran?
Someone told us, that tweeted us saying that he wasn't happy about it.
Yeah.
I was hoping to meet him last night because he won an under-20s All-Ireland with UL Bohemians back in 10 years ago. They had their 10-year reunion last night. So I met a load of those lads like Kyle Sheridan and a lot of ex-Munster players. Killer was on it, Dave Kilcoyne and Murray, but he didn't make it out, so didn't get to question him. But look, there's no arguing, he is Bran. Like, we need to do what, but actually, we need to do a little caricature of him,
Gary.
Yeah,
Gary, make it happen.
In a little chair, just tweeting furiously about rugby. So rugby, Munster. before we talk about the game, there was a guy, I don't want to say his name, wrote an article for the Irish Independent about Munster rugby and basically shitting all over the culture and the people and the fans. And
rightly so.
And it was just the most irritating thing. Do you know, like, all the drama we've had over the last few weeks was so annoying. Like, sports should be crack, really.
Yes, yeah.
So I was like, why is
that's why we're here.
Yeah.
We're trying to save sport.
And then it would all blown over. And then this guy, it was like as if he's like, well, no one's listening to me. I want a bit of drama, so I'm going to write this bullshit article where he tried to stitch together this narrative that I don't know where he was pulling his ideas from.
Yeah.
But it reminded me, I've got this lovely walk that I do in UL in Limerick. We're down by the river and it's gorgeous. It's like loads of flowers and trees and people.
Do you go there to write poems?
I go there to think. I don't write there.
You just published a poem recently, did you?
I just put them up on Instagram.
Yeah, right? I just threw a poem out there. Like it was nothing.
Like it was nothing. I love poetry.
Well, what's unusual about this?
Yeah.
Just writing a poem and put it on Instagram.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You liked
and
it.
What?
You liked it.
I did, yeah.
It was about my garden, yeah.
Because I knew if I slagged you about it, you'd be like, he slagged me but didn't like it.
I see, you can slag me.
Yeah.
Well, I get my ideas down there and I was like, and on the path there's a lovely, lovely nature and it's all beautiful. And then there's hogweed, which you're not supposed to touch. And it has a sign anytime there's hogweed that says, don't touch the hogweed because it's poisonous and it's rotten. It'll give you a rash. Mm-hmm. And I wish the Irish Independent would, before they put these articles out, they'd kind of give you a warning that this is absolute bullshit. It might give you a rash.
Yeah, don't touch the hogweed.
Yeah. So we wouldn't have to bring that stuff into our lives and be less joyful because it's so depressing, really.
It's a bit of a downer, isn't it?
Isn't it? Go away.
Yeah, stop it. He seemed, he did go away for a while.
Mm.
But he's back.
He's back, yeah. The hogweed comes out in the spring, I think.
We get him on the show.
Just don't touch him. Get a rash.
We could come on in like space suits.
Just having a little bubble. Like, having to open to talk to him. Did you see the Monster Match?
Yeah.
You didn't.
Yeah, I just can't remember anything about it.
That's okay. It was 27-14 to beat Connacht. Both teams not really having much to play for. So we'll skip through this because we've got a lot coming up on the show today. We've got to look back at those games quickly for 5 minutes because there's fuck all going on in them. We have Jack Carty on the show. He's in the back there already. He's going to come
lurking
in and talk to us.
He's in the shadows.
He's going to come on and talk about Game of Thrones mostly, I think, because he's a huge fan. And we have our Game of Thrones correspondent, Dave Shanahan, who's joining us on the phone to give us his thoughts on what's going to happen in the episode this week.
Yeah.
We also have an interview that Pat did with Ulster fullback Michael Lowry. And we'll also answer all your questions and that kind of crack. So quickly on Munster, they won 27-14. Very little going on in the game. I think they kind of just nullified what Connacht were trying to do, just stop them scoring. And Neil Cronin had a great game for Munster. He was only jumped off the bench 9 minutes before kickoff because Conor Murray pulled out a neck injury, which is alarming.
It's a bit worrying,
Yeah. They said that he could have played, so it's but they didn't want to take a risk, which is...
They would say that.
They wouldn't they? Yeah, so I think, Pat, you interviewed him, didn't you? And you've got a clip, this is a few weeks ago, where he said something interesting about how he manages the injury.
Yeah, Conor Murray was just saying, it's talking about how he's never going to take a risk with his neck again because, you know, because he was out for so long. So this is how he's so ultra cautious on it, which might explain why they weren't messing around, you know, for a regular season game when they got a quarter final next week. So we can hear that bit now.
And in terms of, you know, like I know Brian has said it before, you're never fully fit. Like, you're always going to go into the game with like a bang on the elbow or like a dead leg or something annoying you. But in terms of neck-wise, I was fully fit because I can say that, like, if ever anything happened it again, I would wait beyond the date when it was said it was going to be okay. I would make sure even more so, give myself even like another 2 or 3 weeks beyond when people said I could play it, just to make sure I'm comfortable with it because, you know, people don't see if you're injured, people don't see it. Like, if you have a bad knee or bad ankle, like, people don't see that on Saturday. They just see you and they expect a certain standard of performance from you.
That was Conor Murray. That's interesting. I suppose with an injury like that, you got to be fairly cautious about it. And it was a nothing game. So hopefully there's not much going on. I think the fact that Neil Cronin got a game, though, was pretty big because he was brilliant. Sean Cronin's younger brother. Scrum half really bossed the game.
Is that right?
Yeah, and they brought on to my delight my favourite under 20s player, Craig Casey, who only got on for 2 minutes at the end, but he was
And you can say I've been talking about Craig Casey.
Yeah,
well, for a year,
6 months.
Not even.
But yeah, he's going to be an exciting player, man. And I know
he's hard nut, isn't he?
Yeah, tough, isn't it? Now he didn't touch the ball or anything like that. So, but he still got his first cap. He was against France. He was like telling the French lads to fuck off and stuff like that. He's pure Limerick, like, which Munster need. I think they need guys like that who are, you know, just have a little bit of an attitude. But they've also signed McCarthy from Leinster as well, right? So,
he's
gonna be good competition there next year because Matheson will probably stay on. I'd imagine they've signed him till November, but I'd imagine they'll keep him.
Why are Leinster getting rid of him?
Nick McCarthy, just probably because he wasn't getting a game, and
they're losing a lot of players.
Yeah,
you know, they're losing Noel Reid. He's gone to Leicester. Jack McGrath, obviously.
Yeah, Noel Reid went really well the other night.
Tom Daly,
He went really well. Yeah.
Tom Daly's going as well.
Yeah, well, he's going to Connacht then. Yeah, like, he went to Connacht already, but he's just going to move there permanently next season.
Okay.
So, Sean O'Brien as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's guts of your kind of.
They can cope with it. Yeah, fine.
I know. Still, it's a. Not many other teams, I think, are losing that many players.
No.
So more on Munster. JJ Hannerin came off the bench, did really well. Blaine Dahl did very well as well. But look, again, it was not much to play for in that game. So so that was it. You were co-comming for the Munster match.
Yeah, fast. Yeah, decent. I actually thought it wasn't a bad game. A few drop balls early on. It was wet and windy. It was a bit tricky, but apart from that, it dried up, and then we got to see a little bit of rugby anyway.
Mm.
a few big collisions. It was a decent old Indra Pro, I thought. It's the most I've enjoyed co-coms. Bernard Jackman's a good lad.
Yeah, he's
a
legend.
Yeah. He's a good man to be co-comming with. And game-wise, I think the shining light was Marcus Rae. He came off the bench maybe after 10 minutes when Sean O'Reilly went off with a head injury, which, you know, could be. Was it a chest injury?
Yeah.
And hence not the red card. But.
That was like watching an AIL match on television. Yeah. Do you know when AIL gets shown on TV once a year and it's like the referee, the touch judge, has sort of like completely bottled it. Because it was a headbutt. It was like, because McFadden had the headband on, it was like he was transported back in time to what the State of Origin game in Rugby League in Australia, where they just beat the shit out of
him. Where headbutts are to be encouraged.
Yeah.
What do you mean you haven't headbutted? Go on, get stuck in with you.
Yeah, and he was so confident afterwards. He was like, penalty? What are you getting a penalty for? Yeah. He pulled me.
I know. He pulled my jersey. See, Darce is on Twitter as well.
Yeah, I saw that.
Saying, Darce, big fan of the show.
Yeah.
Let's not give him too hard of a hard time.
He got enough of it anyway.
He did, yeah. He got a lot of replies.
Yeah.
I went through them and there wasn't a single reply that agreed with him.
Yeah.
But what did he say?
What did he say, yeah?
He said, Sean really milked it. And he says, you're not allowed to pull the jersey either.
He's asking for us there.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, keep it coming though, Darce. It's good stuff.
Yeah.
I like it.
It was so funny because it didn't hurt him, obviously, like, but he was appalled by the fact that he got, what did he say? I got headbutted in the face.
Yeah, I think Clancy was being a bit smart with him. Clancy goes, I think Reedy goes, what's going on? And Clancy goes, are you okay? I think it was like a sarcastic, oh, are you all right?
Yeah,
and he goes, well, I'm all right, but I just got headbutted in the face.
Are you okay?
And to be fair, so Clancy's kind of suggesting that he's a bit of a softie, or he's making a bit much of it. But he got headbutted in the face, and he didn't even flinch.
Mm.
He's tough. Like,
yeah. That wasn't the reason he went off, though, was it?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. Honestly, I don't know. But it was just after, like a few minutes later.
Yeah.
Marcus Rae came on, and I was like, right, well, that looks like an HIA.
But Marcus Rae did play pretty class.
He was brilliant.
Yeah. That try they got was he scored. I think they'd gotten into Leinster's 22 after like 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And they scored that try on 62 minutes and they didn't leave the 22.
Went on and on.
It was like almost 20 minutes.
They were going backwards. It looked like that was going to be a big moment for Leinster if they'd continued to defend the way they were going.
Mm.
I think Leinster gave away maybe 6 or 7 penalties.
Got a yellow card.
Yeah, yellow card. Then Ulster scrum was going really well as well. They probably should have made more of it.
Mm.
Should have scored the try earlier, I suppose, been a bit more clinical, but they were going backwards. They were probably losing ground, and I thought that was a little bit like what Leinster do to sides. Sometimes they've got this perfect phase play, but sometimes you just hold on to the ball, keep asking questions, and eventually the defence will make a mistake. Mm. Then Marcus just picked and went.
Yeah. No, I was very impressed with Darren Cave's defence as well.
Yeah.
His reads on the back door, like, that is such a huge play when you've someone that can do that 4 or 5 times in a game.
Yeah.
Because it's becoming such an obvious play for every team to do that.
Yeah.
Either tip on or out the back door, and Leinster are doing 2 of them in a row, like, and he's just making these calls, shooting and taking man and ball or getting them right at the ankle so they're dropping.
Keegan and I have chatted about that a couple of times. And if you play for long enough, you've probably seen everything there is to do.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, really.
And like,
yeah.
That sounds really cocky, you know. Yeah. There's nothing out here that's going to be new to me. I've seen it all, fellas.
Yeah.
But there's not that many other things you can do.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you come up with one play that works, then straight away you'll go, I know what an alternative one is for that, a different option of it, or a tip-on, or an inside. You know, that's grand. I've got that all sorted. Yeah. And Kiwi's just a guy who just, he's very clever, he's very experienced, and he knows his stuff, and he knows little triggers. And you might not be able to explain what he's doing, but he just knows when he sees a shape. He might not be able to tell you what that play is or exactly what's going on. You see a shape and you just know, and he's a guy who just reads it really well.
Mm.
Last game, not last game, definitely, but depends who's going to come in next week. Obviously, I would imagine Luke Marshall and McCloskey will start. He might get a game on the bench, might get another opportunity to play at Kingspan, but...
Yeah.
I think it was just in case, that was a nice farewell to him in case he doesn't play next week.
Yeah, to give him captaincy and all that.
Yeah.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah, disappointed to see him retire. He's still, what is he, 32?
Yeah.
33 maybe?
Yeah.
Will he go into coaching, you reckon, or?
I don't think he'll go into coaching initially, but maybe a little bit, maybe just on the side. Mm. But I think he's got a couple of things he's sort of keen that they might work out. Mm-hmm. He's smart. He could kind of, I'd imagine he could put his hand down and do well.
Cool. Benetton Treviso also made the other quarterfinal after beating Zebras, and Munster will play them next weekend. And obviously Connacht travelling up to Kingspan to play Ulster. Any predictions for those games?
I couldn't call the Ulster Connacht game. That'll be tough. Mm. Ulster have been beaten twice.
Be a great game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Similar styles of rugby.
Yeah, if they get a good day for it, hopefully we'll see plenty of rugby.
Yeah. I couldn't call that either, being honest. Yeah, it's going to be a tough one. Because Jack Carty's here, I might say that Connacht, I think, will win it.
Yeah. Well, I think Treviso are going to win as well.
Yeah, that's going to be a great game as well. Obviously, a couple of weeks ago over there, it was end-to-end stuff. So
yeah.
I can't wait. I'll go to that on 3 o'clock on Saturday in Limerick. Limerick is littered with the election posters at the moment. Are they around Belfast as well?
No. Oh, sorry. Yes, they are. Yeah.
So annoying. So annoying.
Yeah.
Like, it's like kind of frames a part of your life for a month now. We're just sort of staring at these faces.
Yeah.
There's a guy in Limerick who I don't know much about politics. He could be a lovely fella. He probably is. But his poster from about 50 meters away, he looks like Adolf Hitler. When you're looking at it, you're just like, oh, Hitler's running around. And when it gets to the election time, I'm just going to go in and vote for anyone. I probably won't have done my homework, but yeah. I definitely won't be voting for Hitler,
like,
because we all know how that went.
Be interesting to see if his what sort of a politician he is, if he has a similar kind of worldview. Your man doing the headshots must have gone, Are you sure about this?
I know who's his campaign organizer. Yeah. Like, you got to look at it from 50 metres away as well.
Yeah.
Because that's where most people will see it, like, it's from far away because it's gone like that.
Yeah, no one gets out of the car and walks over to go, it's not Hitler. We can vote for him, it's grand.
His name is Adolf as well, which is weird. Don't see many Adolfs these days.
Adolfs, Elvises, or Jesuses?
Yeah.
Not that many.
Rare enough.
For different reasons.
You punched the tree then.
There was a guy from near Corian called Elvis, actually.
Was there?
Yeah, from Ardcliffe, little town, 5 minutes from Corian.
Is he like your age or is he?
Never met him, just heard about him. Probably heard a lie about him, if I'm honest.
As in,
this guy's called Elvis. There probably isn't one called Elvis. Right, someone just thought, here's a wee rumor, we'll start.
Yeah. Oh, you should date your next child, Elvis. There you go.
It's going to be a girl. Go with it.
Adolf.
Yeah.
Little Adolf. We have an interview with Michael Lowry coming up.
Yeah.
He is obviously a massive favourite of ours. We love him.
Enormous.
He'd be a good Arya Stark, maybe, or something like that.
Very
from
good.
Game of Thrones.
Very good.
Small but deadly.
Yeah, he's just like, he's a Targaryen though.
Yeah,
that's the only issue. But yeah, apart from that.
Stick him in there. So here he is talking to, it's actually Jack O'Toole who interviewed him, apologies, it's not Pat. So here's Jack and Michael Lowry.
The Leicester one was huge for you. Like, I remember you couldn't take the smile off your face after the game. Like, it's obviously something, that kind of moment was something you've obviously been waiting for since a kid. Like, can you remember that whole week? Like, I mean, was it nervous energy? Like, how were you going into it? Like,
I think I wasn't really nervous, you know, I was really excited actually. I didn't know that I would be starting until maybe midweek, that I'd be definitely starting that game. And but I was just really excited to actually get playing. And it was a position that, you know, fullback, I'd just been really training and I had one game at under 20s. And but yeah, that was a special moment. When I started for the first start against Leicester at the European Cup at home, like, there's, you know, home game in the European Cup, it's hard to beat.
It's a different level of atmosphere there, like, because it's like 17,000-18,000, the place is rocking, like, and I suppose, especially when you come from school, I know some of the school games are big, but it's definitely a kind of not ratcheted up a little bit, like, and I was kind of just talking to Eric there about, he said it was the moment he came up against Samson Lee as the moment that he kind of realised, okay, I can really kind of compete and hang at this level. Like, was there any moment for yourself maybe over the last season where you're looking like, all right, I can not only kind of play at this level, but I can really compete and I really kind of belong here, you know?
Yeah, I think once the Leicester game went quite well, that I thought, you know, I really love this, and it sort of gives you the confidence that you can be competing at that level.
Mm.
You know, it was one of those special days that it's one game that you, if someone was to tell or ask you what game would you want to start your first game in for Ulster, be a home game in the European Cup.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's something that I'd look forward to for years, and that's, I think, looking forward to it is probably, you know, the best thing about, you know, if you're playing against the likes of Manny Tuilagi and you know, George Ford. And I think when you realise that you've played an 80-minute game against those couple of players, and there are stars against Racing, and come out in the good side on a win, that's when you realise that you can compete at that level.
Yeah, it's interesting. I remember, like, Per Angus came on against Manu, yeah. And I think Manu ran a beeline from him from like 15 metres out and smashed through him. And I just remember talking to Tom last year. He broke through against the Ospreys, and every time he got the ball, Alan Wynne-Jones was there, like, in a second, and just put him into the dirt. And, like, it was that kind of level of, he's exactly as advertised, you know, this person I've been watching on TV is the real deal. Like, is there anyone that you've maybe come up against, either an outside back or a back, where you're like, this person was exactly, you know, as good as I thought they were going to be, or?
Yeah, well, I think, like I said, Sam Zabo, you know, he was class against us, and, you know, there's always players that you're just like, wow, this is incredible that you're playing against these types of players. And, you know, like I said, Manny Tuilagi, he was, again, unbelievable, and he's one sort of player that you sort of target as such, you know, going into games like that. You know, he's their go-to man. Yeah, I know that you realise that, you know, there's that sort of step between internationals and club players as such, you know. They just have that extra bit of class about them.
Yeah, I remember I was talking to Liam Gill. I think he's playing in Europe now. He's played for the Queensland Reds, and I remember talking to him about coming up against Victor Matfield on the line-out, and you kind of had that, like, oh God, there's Victor Matfield. But then within 2 minutes, you're right in the middle of a game.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, so I mean, you're not really thinking about it like that. Yeah. So, but I'm sure it's like once you come out the other side of those things, it's like, I mean, it must be kind of like your self-assurance for you that it's like, once again, like I can belong here, you know. This is not just me watching TV, like I'm in the game here, you know.
I remember standing in the tunnel going out to the Racing game and just standing beside Nakarawa and Finn Russell and all their, you know, big stars. But then once again, you know, when you're on the pitch, it changes, you know, you don't really think anything of it. It's just a game.
Watching you play, like, as I said, like in the open field and kind of ball in hand, you've been very good, but I'm sure I'm not kind of around you every day, especially coaching you as well. Like, is what kind of areas do you look at your own game, maybe as places that you'd like to improve, or maybe areas that you think you can work on and get better at as the years go on?
I think definitely a work on is, you know, passing and kicking. I think those two skills in particular are so important. You know, you've probably always, you can work on your speed and your footwork and all, but it's something that you might just have in genetics or whatever, but and, you know, maybe you get a wee bit bigger as well. But I think, you know, passing and kicking is definitely one for the positions that I've played that are ones that will always be one to work on. You know, you'll never be perfect.
Well, especially at kind of school level, like, you're obviously playing with better players now, but I'm sure that the windows for a hole opening up are tighter. The spaces in the backfield when you're looking for gaps to kick, I'm sure they're smaller. Like, is that one of the adjustments that you have to kind of get the grips with in the pros? Is that, like, you know, everything has to be the kind of the gaps are smaller, the timing has to be a bit crisper? Is that kind of one of the big adjustments, like, as a playmaker?
I think there's probably less opportunities to get things right. You know, at school you can maybe, you know, there'll be a few drop balls in the team and like a 2v1 or 3v2 or whatever, but those are the opportunities that you have to nail at, you know, being a professional game. It's fine margins, you know. We saw in the quarter final of the European Cup, it's fine margins that win and lose games, and you know, it's but it, it's demanded standards in training that can sort of prepare you for games.
Yeah, I suppose like that's one of the other things, I suppose, the analysis side of things. Yeah. And every player obviously has their own individual analysis, but I can imagine it as a playmaker, obviously you're watching your own game, but I suppose when you're breaking down opposition, is that kind of one of the things that you're really aiming in at, is like to see where, okay, maybe the fourth defender shoots up quick, or is it those little things that you're kind of looking to see where gaps might appear in it before a game? Like,
it's definitely something that as a collective we all talk about, and you know, maybe you know a 13 might shoot out a line, or you know, they soften off or whatever, but as an individual looking at other teams, you'll maybe pick up certain things that other players in the team won't pick up, and they'll pick up things that you won't pick up, and then you come back to it as a collective and express that to each other.
Yeah, I suppose like just as a back and someone that kind of gets to handle the ball, like you've got a lot of weapons there with Will and Jacob and Robert Balakoon. Like there's guys that can really go. I mean, what is it like playing in a back line, I suppose, that has that much firepower really to it? Like where guys, I mean, even watching Jacob, you give him the ball and it's like he could score from 50 metres out. Like I mean, I'm sure you just have to kind of stay alert, especially as a support player almost as well. Like, this could go at any time.
That's the thing. You know, playing that, like, so Jacob and Rob, you know, if they've got the ball in a bit of space, you'll be with them, but in case they need it. But you sort of just think that they're going to score. You know, you back them to score, and I think you back most people in the back line to score, but, you know, you never know. You have to be in the end of the support line or... you know, be with him just in case. But sometimes you just think, I'll just hold back and let Jacob or Rob do his thing.
You're almost going to go back to the sideline waiting for the kick.
let them do their thing, you know. That's the thing, scoring tries.
Yeah, no, I would, man. I would, definitely. It's been easy to watch. Anyway, cheers. Appreciate it.
Okay, welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby. We've got Tana Umanga and Brian O'Driscoll here. Obviously, the world's most obvious question. Do you both subscribe to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby?
Easy one. Baz and Andrew's.
Exactly.
It is the podcast in Northern Ireland and the South.
Both, the island of Ireland.
It's music, it's rugby, it's a multitude of things.
Okay, there's a little bit of bluffing going on there.
Okay, you're very welcome back. We are delighted to have Jack Carty join us on Trimby's couch. How are we doing?
It's actually nice and warm from you sitting here beforehand. But good. Cheers for having me on, lads.
Delighted to have you.
Are you new to the show? Are you familiar? You're a big fan?
Huge fan,
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're a big fan, right?
I've been following it the last couple of weeks. I saw there was a reference that I was in your kind of Game of Thrones thing. I think someone mentioned I want to be Sansa Stark. So.
I think someone said you were... Jon Snow.
No, that's Cooney.
No.
John Cooney.
Because that's Targaryen. Yeah, he's Sansa Stark.
I'm a Stark.
Your man reckons
you're getting better and better.
Yeah.
You happy with that?
I'll take it. Sansa's not a bad looking. Not a bad looking girl,
anyway.
Is he?
She's gorgeous and she's getting stronger,
Yeah.
She was a bit of a pussy at the start, but she's...
She's grown into herself. She's real Stark now.
Yeah, hopefully she'll make it now, tomorrow.
I don't think she will.
No?
Well, no, I don't not think she will, but I think she's one of the ones who's a potential death.
Yeah.
You're a huge fan, right?
I am, No, it's, I'm looking forward to it now. I'm kind of trying to avoid spoilers the last couple of weeks, but I'll watch it after training tomorrow evening.
Mm-hmm. Have you any predictions?
Night King, I say, will go down south, everyone in the Crips, I say, are pretty dust.
You reckon?
I think so.
Why then?
Well, they've referenced it like 5 or 6 times, didn't they, in the last episode? They were like, it's the safest place.
They reckon the all the dead bodies in the crypts are going to burst to life?
Come up, I think so.
And then kill them all.
Ah! Oh.
Yeah.
Where did I miss that?
That's one of the theories out there.
Uh-huh. I'm looking forward to seeing that red priestess, what's her name? Because remember, she hasn't been seen.
She said nothing.
And she said she'd come back to die in this country, so be interesting to see when she comes back.
Yeah. Where is she?
That's the Fire Lady.
She's gone back to Volantis, I think that's where she's from, is it? Volantis? Across the Narrow Sea.
I wonder what that accent was.
Volantis, yeah. I don't know. I say it'll be a few character deaths tomorrow, yeah.
Yeah, would you be tempted to stay up for it?
I'll see. I'm driving back to Galway after this, so I'll probably wait till tomorrow evening.
It's an 80-minuter as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
It was only 45 last week, right?
Yeah, well.
This is because it's the battle. They yeah. make a long break.
So all the rest of them, there's only four more episodes and they're all 80 minutes.
Okay.
Anyway, Clonet.
Well, I actually wanted to talk about A Star Is Born before that because I saw you tweeting that you watched it on a flight back from Dubai.
I was in Dubai last week with my girlfriend and we actually managed to get a complimentary upgrade. So it was unreal. Oh. And it was myself.
Did you pull a few strings?
No, I actually didn't.
Kieran Marmion actually got onto us and said that he reckons he got engaged and that's why he got. Yeah. Is this the little secret?
That's what kind of a couple of the lads know. That's, no. I think Marmo's, that could be more on Marmo's scene now than mine. But anyways, yeah, we managed to get a complimentary upgrade and I hadn't seen the movie. Obviously, we'd been at a, I don't know if you've ever heard of Zero Gravity, the pool party place, so we were there. The day before, so a bit fragile on the plane coming home, and there was a lady beside us. It was my girlfriend, and there was I, and we kind of all started at the same time. Maybe we probably started 5 minutes earlier than the lady beside us. So my girlfriend, like, tears like coming down her face. I had like welled up, and then the lady 5 minutes later, like, completely burst into tears. So.
what part?
Very end.
All of
it. Not going to give spoilers, but most, but probably just the end part. Yeah.
Yeah. When everybody comes alive in the crypts and kills everyone.
It was the same with I went to the Avengers there the other day as well, and I was there with so Tiernan O'Halloran to the left of me, who'd be like one of my best mates. So it was Tiernan and then Sean O'Brien and Ulton, and the two lads would have no problem. They were like clapping and cheering, and I'm not going to give any spoilers. So, but I was welling up towards the end, and then Tiernan was there. I was like, oh no, I can't cry in front of him.
Gotta let it out, don't you? I had one going on a flight to Australia a few years ago, and Les Mis was out, the film, and myself and one of the lads watched it at the same thing at the same time. But we'd taken Valium before the flight to knock us out, but all it did was just make us really emotional. It was just streams of tears running down our face for the whole thing. Like, we just got pretty high. But
yeah, I think Tommy told me one time he watched Marley and Me. Like, Lord, he's got no chance.
No. Yeah, no, you're just pretending you're yawning all the time. Yeah,
there's not that many. I'm trying to think of any ones that Interstellar actually did it to me as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know, when he's in the fourth dimension. Have you seen it?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And then he's, that was probably the only other one. So that
Merv! Yeah, Merv!
Don't leave me, Merv.
Yeah.
Yeah, so not just them.
Class.
Yeah, no, A Star Is Born is a great show, isn't it? Mm. I watched that only like about a month ago as well for the first time.
So that's when I kind of was out during camp when the first song I called in, and the lads were just playing the playlist the whole way through. I think it was Bundy and Dave Kilcoyne and the likes were just playing the playlist on the bus the whole time. So yeah. I had known the soundtrack before I'd actually even seen the movie.
Yeah. So where were you? Zero Gravity, did you say?
On the Saturday, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds like the sort of place you'd rupture a spleen.
That was in the Atlantis. I actually went back. I went back there the day before as well to the actual scene of the crime. Yeah, went back to did the actual slide. Did everything. So yeah.
Were you crying then as well?
I wasn't. It was the actual slide itself. It's you're kind of like standing up and then it just drops from underneath you. It actually is quite terrifying. So I dropped first and I could actually hear my girlfriend like screaming when she was going down as well. So gone the whole way back to the start of it, I was in when, I don't know if you were playing, it was the Ireland played France in the World Cup, remember in Cardiff when we were playing that game?
No.
And I was in London for the day before, I got the train to Cardiff and met my family there. I was feeling profusely ill kind of at the match, and then I was in Cardiff Airport and like just broke out in like a sweat. My leg kind of got real inflamed, so I got rushed in an ambulance to Cardiff Hospital. And it was grand, kind of settled down. And then obviously a couple of months later, then my spleen ruptured. So what they reckoned was that infection that I had enlarged my spleen. So I was compromised kind of at any stage. So I was actually quite lucky the fact that it didn't actually happen on a rugby field, that it happened happened in Dubai, yeah. So it wouldn't have been for Fionn Carr. Fionn Carr used to play with Connacht and Leinster. His actual girlfriend was the one, well, wife now, Claire Nestor. She looked at the actual MRI and she's like, oh no, you need to do it again. There's something definitely wrong.
So this was in Dubai?
In Dubai, yeah. They were there at the same time, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, she's a doctor, is she?
She's an anaesthetist.
Okay. So it was, you went from the water park?
Yep.
And then went to the brunch,
which was on a real crack. Yeah. Like, I only felt like I was like winded or that, didn't feel anything like that, and too major it happened. And yeah. obviously the adrenaline of going to the brunch later on that day was kicking in. So yeah, myself and the two lads went to that, and then kind of about 6-7 o'clock started feeling pretty shit then.
Yeah. Jesus. Jack, it happened at the brunch, didn't it?
That's what everyone says. Yeah, yeah. Ali Muldowney was, I put up a Instagram last week, and Ali Muldowney, who's playing with Bristol, he was like, I said back to the spleen of the crime, and he was like, oh, is that what you call bouncers Gosh. Over there? So, yeah. Like, nah, but there was a few old theories going around of what it was, this and that, but
yeah. I once knocked myself out on a water slide. You know when you've got the pole that you pull yourself. Yeah. I was like trying to catapult myself down the slide, and I just whacked my head off it. And just completely KO'd. And some French guy had to dive down after me. Like, and
three spotters, you were gone at the top. Gone, and you're still unconscious at the bottom.
Yeah, I only remember waking up in the water down the bottom, like, and he was like carrying me in the water.
I
so embarrassed.
One time was going down the slide with my young fella. He's three, right? Yeah. And I thought, he can handle this, it'll be grand. And but then at the bottom, it was like getting quite side to side.
Yeah, yeah.
So I thought, right, I'll spare him that. I'll like skillfully keep him in the middle and like shimmy to make sure he kind of doesn't get sloshed about too much. Cracked his head off the ceiling.
And then, I'm scared him for life.
Yeah, and then his mum was standing at the bottom. I was like, "Don't tell mum, whatever you do."
I'll be your best friend.
So yeah, that was that. And then he hasn't been on a slide since.
He'll come around to it.
Yeah,
father of the
year. Could be worse, son. You could have done your spleen.
Your spleen.
Do your spleen, whatever you do.
I was looking at your Wikipedia before we on the train up, and yeah. Says you played a lot of soccer, and then it says,
"I saw this." Yeah, someone referenced this to me during the week.
Really?
About,
it says they made you stop playing soccer because you were too good, or something. Like that, was it?
And something about some in-betweeners character or something like that as well.
Oh, I missed that.
No, that wasn't the case at all. I played soccer up until the age of like 15, and if anything, it was probably that I wasn't actually probably good enough to probably push on. I'd say.
Okay. You played for Ireland though, did you?
I did, yeah. So I would have played with Robbie Brady, Jeff Hendrick.
Great.
And I don't know if you know, Matt Doherty was playing. He scored a few goals for Wolves the last couple of weeks. So I actually managed to keep him out for a couple of weeks. So.
Really? What position were you?
Centre-back. Centre-back. So it was actually pretty cool.
That was under-15s, was it?
Under-15s, yeah. So we played, we did a big trip in Qatar, which was class, in the like Aspire Academy, which is like this. It was unbelievable. I'm trying to think how long ago, 10 years ago. So it was like back then, you know, like going away from like your folks and stuff. It was class. Yeah, it was a really good experience.
Had you a few trials over in the UK?
I was offered a trial in Southampton. And so my mum was actually secretary in the club at the time, soccer club at the time. So I got this letter saying, oh, look, you've been invited to go on trial. And I was like, yeah, packing the bags, I'm off. Good luck. And it was just fizzled out, and I was like, kind of, what was going on there? Like, my mum was like, oh, there's a transfer embargo, they're not signing any more players. But subsequently, only found out kind of after Christmas that they actually kind of just like let it fizzle out. They wanted me to do the leaving cert and all. So,
nice.
I could have been playing Premiership or,
yeah. Oh, your mum,
yeah, mum and dad. Look. Worked out for the best, I suppose, didn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it worked out well, but it could be unbelievable.
Yeah, so I'm sure, look, what can you do?
Yeah.
What can you do? A lot of fellas go over there and kind of come back and.
So who was the standout for you back then? Was Robbie Brady?
Robbie Brady was incredible. Yeah, he was a different level. Yeah. He'd signed with United at that stage, and I think there was like a big tug of war between United and Liverpool for who he was going to sign with, and he went with United in the end.
What was the level of professionalism like in your club and even around? Because I played a lot of soccer in Limerick, and I had to decide at 19, like that was as late as I played Premier until I was 19, and then. Offered like an academy contract at Munster, and it was almost that the route looked so much harder to go down the soccer route.
Yeah.
Probably because there's so much more competition, but a little bit less, you know, there's not as much professionalism, I don't think.
No, like it was, I just found that it was nearly just your dinner for enjoyment, to be honest. Like we didn't play any sort of tactics or anything like that. We played maybe a 4-4-2 one week, and we'd change it around, and then. It was more just kind of for the crack than anything too serious, to be honest. So, like I was probably the same height I am now when I was playing, so I was a bit like taller than everyone, and kind of was good in the air, but my feet, I didn't have great technical skills to say. So,
I play a lot on Monday nights now. When you come up against someone that's, I've played against a few League of Ireland ex-players, like, yeah. And I'd be getting ahead of myself thinking I'm quite good, and then yeah. You play, it's one of them, and they're just, it's the touch, the first yeah. Touch, and how quick they move the ball. But then, so you made a decision quite early then that rugby was...
Yeah. I actually didn't end up getting an academy out of school, so I did a BCom in Galway. So did college for like 6 months, and then Nigel Carlin, who's the backs coach now in Connacht at the time, who was academy coach, he was like, yeah, we want you next year. And I was like, right, but I'm going to enjoy the rest of the college year. So I had a good first year in college in Galway, which at least I kind of got in, which was good crack.
Yeah. Were you, did you play our schools then? Or?
Utes. We actually yeah. Beat the Irish schools, which was...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, we played them, yeah.
Like, nice.
It probably wasn't... I remember, obviously, all the Utes lads. It was myself... Tyke Furlong was on the team, Marmo was on the team, and we'd obviously built at this massive big spectacle, yeah. Kind of like us against them, and we managed to beat them. Then we went on and we nearly lost to Georgia and Germany in the so like our season was kind of done after we beat the school. That was good crack as well back then. So
you had a serious 20s team as well, didn't you? Like Niall Scannell, JJ Hanran, Chris Farrell, Luke McGrath, Tyke Byrne,
yeah,
Josh van der Fleer.
Serious team. We were in South Africa for. We were actually pretty unfortunate with kind of the way it went. We beat South Africa, who were the hosts, in the first game, and then kind of lost the last couple of minutes to England. And if we'd went that, England, I think went to the, sorry, South Africa went on to win it then. So, but yeah, that was class.
That was U10, JJ12, was it?
No,
was
I actually didn't. I didn't start. It was JJ started 10, and he got nominated for the IRB Player of the Year that year.
Yeah,
he was phenomenal. Down, he's back playing good rugby again. He's playing class the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
good try yesterday.
Mm. Very cool. How are you getting on this season then?
You're enjoying it, yeah.
Yeah, you're playing in a lovely brand of rugby.
We are, yeah. I suppose it's kind of a hybrid between what Pat used to do and then. What we used to play last year, obviously, Pat, we used to throw the ball from, like, running from our own 22, and then we kind of tried to bring that in the following year, and it kind of got us in a bit of trouble, so we've been a bit more pragmatic in kind of how we play in terms of our kicking game, and then also trying to be a bit more direct, because we used to always be kind of play out the back or kind of play a lot with a lot of width too early, and it kind of got us in a lot of trouble, so... we play really direct, and then kind of when we see opportunities in either behind teams or to the edge, we'll take it. But Friendies came in, the coach and staff there, they've kind of, the culture has been really, really good. Fellas rewarding each other, picking up kind of just where we've been building the last few years, and it's been really, really promising.
That year you're talking about when Pat was there,
yeah,
you would have been tempted to have thought that you were playing too much rugby, or you kind of could have took too many risks in your 22 and your receive restarts or something. But at the time, I remember thinking, how are they getting away with this? But it always worked.
But like,
and it seemed like teams would kick it along and then they go, we know exactly what they're going to do. Mm. And sure, you would definitely do it.
Yeah.
But you still always, Ali Muldowney, just out
class,
the back,
yeah.
Tip-ons, whatever it was. Yeah. Everything, if it goes to him, he's definitely not carrying. Something's happening. Yeah. But you seem to just, it worked so well.
Yeah, it did. It's... Because I remember, I think it was, we called it Canes at the time, because the Hurricanes had started it, and it was very, very much, like, it was very set, which was, it obviously worked really, really well at the time, especially kind of teams weren't defending how they're defending at the moment. Anyway, teams are just filling a full line full of 13 and then using, like, two people in the backfield. So at the time, there was, like, a lot of pendulum defences, and we were able to beat teams on the edge, and we used kind of a saying that every pass was 5 meters. So we literally just from mid rucks, we literally just like tip the ball, pass to the edge, then you'd play to Ali again. Ali would pass it to someone, so he didn't have to carry. And it was pretty simple. And then obviously our set plays were pretty good as well. It was very much about scoring more points than the opposition. Which yeah, look, it worked for us.
Mm. How's Ali Muldowney? How's he going now at Bristol?
He's been playing the last couple of weeks. I think he had an issue with his neck at the start of the season.
Yeah. And Bristol seem like they're trying to play that kind of rugby. Are they
They are playing. Obviously, I think obviously when you're playing the Premiership, there's obviously the promotion relegation sort of thing. So I think they've kind of reined it in a bit. You can see that the halfbacks that they have between Sheedy and Mads, obviously they've like good kicking game, and then I think Mads has come off the bench maybe 3 or 4 times in the last 8 weeks and kicked winning kicks.
Yeah.
So I think they're safe now with how they went at the weekend.
Yeah.
So
Andy Friend, I heard you say that he encourages you to use your weapons.
Yeah.
It's an interesting word. And I saw you say you'd use your kicking, your kind of positional kicking.
Yeah.
But I would also think your flair and your ability to create is a huge weapon of yours. Was that something you've developed since Andy came in now, or is it something that you always had in your game?
I suppose I would have thought that I always would have had it from a younger age. I'd say probably the earlier part of my career probably took a bit of a knock in terms of like mistakes and stuff, so I would have reined it in a bit. And especially when you're playing in such a rigid structure in a 2-4-2, it was very much catch, receive, like catch, pass. I had a good conversation at the start of the season with Friendy, and as he said, he talked about weapons and stuff like that. And it was very much kind of, I was like, look, I've been inconsistent the last couple of years. I want to get to a level of consistency and try to, I said, like reach my potential. And he was like, it's not about reaching your potential. It's about the unrealized potential that all players have. And I think that's kind of probably what he's done to a lot of players. He's firstly given them confidence in what they're good at. He did a bit piece last night, I think, with Murray Kinsella, and he was talking. And he was saying, like, a lot of coaches might look to try work on a lot of fellas' weaknesses, which obviously all players do. But he says if every player has, like, some sort of weapon and they can bring that to a match every week, it's going to kind of add to the team. And I think that's what we've been doing, so... good.
Kevin Blade,
yeah.
He seems to be somebody just thriving.
Yeah, yeah.
Under Friend. I mean, is that an example of that? Just empower him, just say go out and just do what you do well, and he's killing it, isn't he?
He's class. Like the last couple of weeks. To be honest, I think one of the main things is the competition as well between obviously between himself and Marms. They're both like at each other's necks. Quite literally sometimes.
Is that right, really?
It's quite
it's what you want, like, so...
He's not afraid to pick either of them either, like Andy
Friend. No, like the two, it'll be interesting. Obviously, the two lads, Marmo played really, really well yesterday.
Yeah, he did.
So, yeah, it's just Blady obviously raises, he's really sharp in around the rooks. And he's been playing class. He got on the end of a few breaks, and he obviously finished a try last week against Cardiff, so he's been going class.
Yeah.
We actually gave you try of the season already, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. We haven't done our official awards yet.
And there is no...
There's no awards?
There's nothing. Yeah. We've nothing to give you.
Just to Boojum. You get to go to Boojum.
Unreal. Fair enough.
But yeah, no, well done.
That try, it was obviously the try against Cardiff, wasn't it? The chip and gather and... The whole play, obviously.
But, like, yeah, playing into the breeze, it was some try, to be fair.
It was the start, yeah.
I meant from the stuff in the 22, like, yeah. Bundy's obviously around the back offload, and then you had Tiernan's obviously off, Swaggy's offload as well, and then, yeah, it was just offloads everywhere. It was, Dennis's pass then obviously out the back to me, and then I was fortunate enough that I got Matthew Morgan kind of flat-footed, because I actually thought, I was like, how did I beat him? Because I'm not, like, wouldn't be the quickest. And I looked at my speed thing and it wasn't quick at all. So I was surprised I actually got there in the end.
Right, so you can check afterwards how
this
technology wasn't there when I played.
They did it last week, I remember. So Marmo, Bundy, and I think there was a few others were doing, like, they were trying to get their top speed. Marmo hit a 10.7,
no way.
10.6 last week, which is... 37 kilometers.
What in training?
Yeah, after training. So they're doing like, so we do like sprints after training.
10.7 is ridiculous. Yeah.
10.7. Wow. He's the fastest man in Connacht rugby history.
Marmion.
That's ridiculously quick.
Yeah.
Like Jacob or like Greg Gilroy, none of them would be getting 10.7.
Galway does have a slight breeze.
Downhill
breeze. So 10.7. So.
That's
pretty
incredible.
Quick.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I used to love the speed training. That was my favourite part of, watching yourself getting quicker over 6 months and get more explosive. I thought that was some of the best training we did. We had an Olympic athlete coaching us in Munster, Tom Cummins,
Class.
Just obviously knew everything you need to know about sprinting, and he had done a PhD on rugby sprinting as well. So
yeah, he was the go-to, wasn't he?
Mm.
He was like the sprinter whisperer.
Yeah.
He was like, I'm going to make you faster.
Yeah. did.
It's going to get better.
And then David Wallace just comes in and beats everyone down in
freak.
Yeah. No training, never trained. He's got his ankles just sellotaped together, like keeping it in place. But so then you've also had an interesting year getting your first cap for Ireland. Tell us about that. How did that feel?
Yeah, it was unreal. Obviously, I probably did think the opportunity probably had passed with just kind of the way coming into World Cup years, sometimes things might tend to change because there's obviously fellas who've been there kind of through the whole cycle, and obviously coming in towards the end, you'd have to be doing remarkably well to get a look in. So I was fortunate enough with how Connacht were playing in terms of form, and then there was kind of a few injuries in my position as well. So it was unreal, something we've been working for years. And just to get it then in Rome as well, it was class. And then to get the 2-1s after that was pretty cool. That was good.
Mm. And I saw you dedicated your first cap to your cousin Brian.
Yeah.
Very sadly passed away. And that was a beautiful moment, I must say.
Yeah, no, it was. Like his parents would be my parents, obviously, and his parents would be quite close. I would have been real close with Brian. He'd been 29 when he passed away. So it was I was kind of unfortunate I couldn't do it for him when he was, I suppose, alive. But yeah. It was kind of a week before, so it was like nearly a year to the anniversary when it happened. So it was a nice little thing, I suppose, I could have done for his family and stuff. So it was unreal. So they're doing a charity cycle for him now on the 26th of this month, which is the day of the Pro 14 final, so unfortunately won't be able to cycle in it. Yeah.
Where's the cycle?
They're doing it from Athlone, because I'm from Athlone. Athlone to Galway.
Lovely.
So I'll be good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Yeah.
Still be there for the celebrations, maybe.
Yeah. Hopefully, yeah. I'll get back for the Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Hopefully, we beat the Ulster
good
lads.
Chat. I was actually passive aggressive.
Yeah. But I was actually thinking when I was coming in, I was like, because I remember I was in before this. I was this camp. I was in pre-camp maybe 2.5 years ago, I think, and you were there, about 2.5, 3 years ago. I was trying to think, remember they used to do them behind a body ball, the body ball sort of stuff, and you had to do the tackling.
What was
it? It was 2016, I think it was. Uh-huh. We'd played Wasps, and I was in maybe 2 weeks later, and I remember we were doing a body ball. And obviously, it was my first time ever in the environment. I was absolutely, like, bricking it.
What's the body ball now?
So, like, say Trimby would, like, run at me, you'd do a tackle, you hit the ground, and, like, place the ball.
Mm-hmm. Are you concerned
Joe is
going to...
No, not at all, but I was just wondering... I remember at the time, ran, and I was like, oh, he's going to try bosh me here. But then he actually ran, and he actually went like 50-60%. So
I did try and bosh you.
I was like, Andrew Trimble's pretty sound. He didn't actually try to bosh me.
Either that or he's an absolute weakling. One or the other.
I'm too old. Yeah. I hope this young fella goes easy on me.
I was done at that stage anyway. I was all but retired.
Yeah. But you're, what are you, 27 now?
26.
26.
26, yeah.
I always found... The one thing I was terrible at focusing on when I was a player was how long your career possibly can be and that you could play until 35. So more about, I suppose, I wish I was more aware of how much time I had and that it wasn't a rush. And I suppose you say it's taken you a while to get that Irish cap, but you obviously must have your sights on the number 10 jersey for Ireland over the next 10 years. Is that the goal?
Well, it was the start of the season. It was to get into a camp, get one cap. Then obviously since I've done that, I've kind of set it to try to get 10 in the next kind of 12 to 18 months. So however that comes about, I just have to kind of worry about playing well. If we can go well with Connacht, it probably makes it a lot easier. Obviously playing in Champions Cup, so I think that can be, you kind of see people be saying, oh, you're playing well, but they're saying, oh, well, it's not in Champions Cup. So hopefully next year, if we're playing well and then obviously competing well in that, I can, hopefully be starting. That's kind of, why wouldn't you be wanting
Absolutely.
To be?
By yourself.
Mm. Yeah, so.
Yeah, good man.
So speaking of Champions, or speaking of...
Speaking of knockout stages of a very prominent...
Which we weren't speaking about at all. Ulster next week in the Kingspan. You were saying beforehand you've got a dinner date afterwards with John Cooney.
Coons, yeah.
Housewarming. that his housewarming. Yeah. So you're staying up in Belfast afterwards. That would be interesting.
It'll be awkward after. It. Well, either way.
It'll be awkward for you, I'd say.
So I'm going obviously playing there Saturday and then staying up after it. There'll be a few of the Ulster lads at it. So,
did you get the invite to that?
No, I didn't. No, it's probably pending.
Is it?
We've moved house. Okay. It must have gone to the old house.
Yeah.
So now it'll be a good crack. The Ulster lads, I met a couple of them. Stu McCluskey is a good lad as well. Yeah. No, calling a couple of them. Obviously, Geordie's up there now as well. And Jack McGrath's obviously, he's kind of got close with him during the Six Nations, so he's a good lad.
Great lad, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's been on the show, actually. Big fan of the
show. Has he?
Yeah. Brought us we don't know if he's a fan, but he's been wrong.
He brought us in some biltong.
Oh, yeah.
I dropped up. My family business would be like pork and bacon production, so I dropped up himself, Tig, and Keane. A big hamper there yesterday full of...
What's the name of the couple?
Oliver Carty Meats. Yours is on the way, don't worry.
Yeah. I'll give you my new address.
Yeah, because I'll send it up. We'll bring it up Saturday.
I don't want the same thing to happen again.
Okay, you're going to stick around because we're going to do... we've got our Game of Thrones correspondent, Dave Shanahan.
Correspondent.
Coming on the phone. And I think the two of you will obviously... the two of you will add to this because I'm pretty useless when it comes to Game of Thrones, to be honest, but... let's see what he has, so let's get him on the phone.
On The North Awaits this week, we discuss the longest battle scene in television history as the Night King's forces finally reach Winterfell in the epic third episode of the final season of Game of Thrones. Join me, Michael Fry, and Carol Kinsella, and a special guest as we analyse the episode and mourn the inevitable death of some beloved characters. That's The North Awaits on Spotify and SoundCloud from 10:30 p.m. Monday the 29th of April. Don't miss out.
Okay, so we've got Shanners on the line. Dave Shanahan.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
You went off and I clapped.
Yeah.
I thought you invited me to clap. I'm the one who does the clapping.
That's my thing.
Anyway, Shanahan, we've got our Game of Thrones
correspondent.
Correspondent on the line.
Yeah,
Shanners.
From beyond the wall.
Shanners, last week Greg Jones had a bit of an easy ride. This week we've got Jack Carty in the studio, who's read all the books. And I know you're in trouble. You need to have done your homework because we've also got Matthew, who runs a Joe.ie Game of Thrones podcast.
Yeah.
So
right.
Just don't be spurting out any old crap. Yeah. Just make sure you're pretty accurate.
I feel like I was a Game of Thrones expert compared to you, Trimby. You put me in hot water here.
I know. I'm very much mid table. I think Barry's kind of in the relegation zone.
Yeah, I'm poor. It all goes over my head. I just kind of like the dragons when they come on. But the lads are coming out with some stuff here that just totally goes over my head.
Okay, so first one, Shanners, the Crypts. What's the chat there? Then everybody's gonna become alive and kill everybody. Is that right?
Is that a theory? Is it? I hadn't even thought about that. What, inside Winterfell?
Yes, that's one of the theories we put out there. Yeah, Lydia. No, what's the Stark?
Lyanna's
gonna come to life, kill everyone.
Yeah, well, is Ned Stark down there as well?
Apparently Ned's not there.
Yeah.
Do you know that, Jack?
I didn't know that.
Wow, that'd be great.
Yeah.
I don't know if the Starks will come back, though. I think just all the people will be killed.
Yeah, but will there be people we know that will...
Varys is down there, yeah. I think Varys.
But who else is down there? Just Lyanna and all the other Stark people?
Yeah... I think so. Yeah, I really don't know. Jack?
All the women and kids are down there.
Yeah.
Didn't Lyanna? Oh, right. Lyanna came back in the books. I think she came back to life. Is that right?
Caitlin Stark.
She came
back to life.
Yeah, okay. That's a big part of the books. Actually, it's not in the show at all, is it? And she comes back and like kills other people, doesn't she?
That'd be class if she came back and she was good. No.
Can
she come back and be good?
No. She kills all the people that like were like bad to her family and stuff,
yeah,
or something like that.
Hung Podrick, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, really? Oh, nice. Jeez, there's a lot going on here. Everybody downstairs, Shanners, do you think they're all dead?
Well, I think there's surely a possibility if the Night King is floating about, he can get them back up, can't he?
Yeah. So, the big ginger wildling.
Kieran Treadwell of Tarth. Varys. I'll be glad to see the back of Varys.
Do you think he's still up to some tricky business there?
He's a rascal. I'd say he's probably the one I'd be most concerned about. Actually, I'm also quite concerned about Daenerys.
Oh, like, definitely. She's definitely, like, the way she reacted to Jon Stark telling her that stuff last week. Yeah, she's definitely going to try something, I reckon.
Yeah.
What's the deal with the little girl that's like a lord?
Mormont, Lady Mormont.
Yeah, that's mad, isn't it? She'd be making all these decisions. She's like 12. I'd be like, don't listen to her. She's an ocean. She's going to throw a strop any minute. Like,
she refused to go to the crypts, didn't she?
Yeah.
Because she's such a...
Oh, she wanted to get out and fight, like...
Yeah. She's going to get her head kicked in, I would have thought.
Yeah, surely not, like...
So, another theory I heard was that the Night King... Now, the camera only kind of panned briefly to the White Walkers at the end, but the Night King wasn't there. Do you think that's significant at all?
Well, he'd be on the dragon, wouldn't he?
Oh, he's going to make a big entrance at some stage then.
Yeah, he'll do... Like, I reckon it'll be something like the... It'll look like the good guys are winning and then help her just swoop in, aren't they?
Yeah.
They don't look that tactical, like, do they? The White Walkers, they're just kind of just walking.
No, yeah, surely they can't really speak, can they?
Yeah. It's just quiet.
You know what? I bet you in all the Game of Thrones forums, no one's ever said, can the White Walkers speak?
Like, yeah, how do they communicate? Like,
No one's dug that deep, Shanners. You're asking all the right questions.
Ooh. There we go.
The Red Woman, do you think she's going to play a part? Because she's just...
Where did she go again?
Volantis. She went back to Volantis, yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I don't know what she's going to do, to be honest. Like.
Yeah, but she's definitely up to something, you would imagine.
Do you reckon? Surely she's away, though. Like, haven't heard of her in ages.
Yeah, but that's...
But she went to sleep, didn't she? She got all old.
She took the necklace off and got really old, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes, that's right, I forgot about that.
You're like, ew. So odd beforehand. Put the necklace back on.
So, after this, then, we've got another three more episodes. So, I mean, the humans have to win this battle, surely.
Yeah, you'd imagine though this will be the episode where surely a lot of people die, won't they?
Yeah, but what I'm saying, if they all die, then that's more or less it, is it not? I suppose the same is true if the White Walkers are all dead.
Yeah, so you'd imagine they'll win, unless it's sort of like the battle sort of goes on over the next three episodes and stuff as well. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Who do you think will die? Who would like to see?
Like, there's a lot of people who are fairly, like, they can get rid of pretty easy, I'd imagine. Like, guys, like...
There's a lot of dead wood.
I don't know.
There's a lot of dead wood. This is like last year with Ulster. Tommy, Lee.
It isn't it, isn't it?
Marshy, Chris Henry, all dead.
Yeah, they're going to be chucked out, yeah.
So I'd say
guys like the Tormund, the big ginger wildling, as you like to call him, I'd say he'll probably go, surely.
I like him. I'm fond of him.
But they're so good at killing like major characters. That...
Say Brienne.
Yeah. Well, they could do that as well. Well, would you reckon any major ones will go? I don't know. Maybe they'll kill Daenerys or something.
Shanners,
I read somewhere that what the actors were earning was published, and that could be a reflection of how many episodes that they're in for.
Oh, really?
So they reckon
Who's earning the most?
So Tyrion, Jaime, Cersei, Daenerys, and Jon Snow are all earning $500,000 US dollars per episode. They're getting paid so much, one theory is that they're the guys that survive.
Okay. Yeah, but also they're the biggest names in general, though, so they might just have a set thing.
I wonder what, if you look at the names that come up on the screen at the start during the intro, whose names come up first? That give you an indication as well?
Maybe.
What's your man's name?
I don't know.
Peter Dinklage. His is the first name that comes up.
Right. I can't. There's people giving out a chat that that Tyrion is going to go rogue and he's going to sort of betray everyone. What do you reckon that?
There's one theory that he's a Targaryen.
Yeah.
There's that as well, isn't there? Because there's a lot of sort of like theories about him in Targaryen and stuff. And then they sort of say him, Jon Snow and Daenerys are then the three main ones then, or something, three Targaryen ones.
Yeah. So if those guys, like, obviously this is massively buying into, I read one article and it said there's five of them survive. But if those five then are the survivors, then we're talking the vulnerable high profile guys are Sansa, Arya, Brienne, Ginger Wildling, I can't remember, Viserys and the Hound.
Yeah. I can see the Hound surviving, to be honest, because they're probably going to do something with him in the mountain, wouldn't they?
The Clegane Bowl.
At some point.
Yes.
Yeah, the Clegane Bowl is...
Yes, exactly. Yeah, the Clegane Bowl. I want to see the mountain crushing more skulls again.
Yeah.
Shannon,
yeah.
what do you reckon about Jaime? In other words, is that prophecy that Jaime will kill Cersei? Do you reckon that could come
out? Yeah, because then he's like the Queen Slayer as well as the King Slayer or something like that. Something...
I don't know
much about the prophecy. What does that all say?
Well, in the way, there was a prophecy that she'd lose, her three kids would die, so all three kids have died, and then that she'd get she'd get murdered by her, and then I'll do some Valyrian name for it, by her
Is that when she went in, when she went into a witch hunt thing?
Well, they don't know if it'll be like Arya wearing Jaime's face, or if it'll actually be Jaime. Cersei's on Arya's list, so you don't know.
That could be a good one then.
Yeah, so there's obviously a lot going on, and there's a lot of Jack's after translating Valyrian there for us. So he's gone to great lengths. You had one theory, Shanners, that was a little bit more basic. You just thought Bran looks like the Night King. He might be the Night King. Is that more or less the conclusion?
When you put pictures on side by side, I think their noses are quite similar. So I don't know if that's a thing.
That pretty much sells it, I think.
They do. I've seen that picture. They're the head off each other.
Yeah, they are. So like, they're surely quite connected now. So that could be one, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Well, I think. So obviously you're under pressure, Shanners, as our expert coming in, and then kind of there's a lot of Game of Thrones knowledge in the room, myself and Barry excluded. then the other issue is that this is out of date in like what 12 well yeah not that long. So everybody listening to this knows how much of a fraud we all are, despite not all these theories. A little bit like Pat when we were watching the Masters.
Yeah.
That's going to keep getting brought up, isn't it? Just Molinari for the Masters is going to keep getting brought
up. Yeah, sorry, Pat. But anyway, as far as we're concerned, I think your opinion is very highly held, Shanner, so thanks a lot for coming on.
Which character would you like us to reference you as?
What character do I want to be?
Yeah, the little girl.
I wouldn't mind being Arya. She's pretty good, isn't she?
Arya.
Yeah.
We've given that to Michael Lowry earlier on.
Oh, really? Well, you guys pick. Who do you think I should be?
No, Mike Lowry just lost his virginity in the last episode, didn't he?
I wouldn't mind being Euron Greyjoy. He's a bit rogue, isn't he?
Is that the guy that rode Cersei?
Yeah.
Ah, I have a theory on that. That she rode him so she can say that the baby that she has then is his baby.
Instead of
Jaime's, yeah.
Yeah, potentially.
Did you not think of that?
I love him because everyone on the show has like all these different motives. Like they want to like rule, or they want to get one piece or something. All he really wants to do is just ride the queen, isn't it? I think he's quite funny. Like.
Yeah, that's you, so man, perfect. Yeah. That's all you. That's what you went to Ulster for. You just want to ride the queen.
Yeah. All right, Shanners. Listen, thanks a lot for coming. Oh yeah, what about the game yesterday?
yeah, it was good, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's enough rugby.
No, it's getting awkward because Jack's here.
I didn't come on here for rugby.
Yeah. Well, look, best of luck next week, man. We'd love to have you on.
Hold on, sorry. Are you getting invited, Shanners, to Cooney's house party next weekend?
No. Are you?
No, I didn't get invited either. But Jack's.
I didn't know there was one.
Yeah,
Jack. Are you going, Jack?
Yeah, I'm going. Yeah.
What the hell?
Myself and Dave Heffernan are gone, so two conic lads.
Oh, no, well, he hasn't. Maybe just hasn't told us about it yet. Well,
oh, keep
Have
you just moved house, Shanners? By any chance?
Have I?
Yeah, have you just moved house? Because a lot of my stuff's going to my old address. I'm wondering that might be the same reason you're not getting invited to a house party.
I actually am moving house now in like a week, but. I just don't think Coons likes you very much.
That's too late to be an excuse. Anyway, Shanners, listen, thanks a lot for coming on.
Yeah.
No worries.
Man. Okay, thanks, Dave. And good luck in the quarterfinals next weekend to all the Irish teams involved. We also asked you to vote on the Guinness Maidenmore Irish Player of the Weekend. And here are your nominees, Marcus Ray and Darren Cave of Ulster, the Munster duo of CJ Stander and Tadhg Byrne. Thanks for your votes and your comments. The winner is Tadhg Byrne. He's won a few times, I'd say, is he?
Yeah, he's probably fed up.
Yeah. Too many teeth. He was good. He was very good. Scored a... Did you see his goose step for the for the try? That was quite funny. Probably not needed, but it looked class. And obviously stealing ball like he usually does. Turn over a few lineouts, etc. We also put out a hashtag AskHOR for your Twitter questions. We'll quickly run through one of these. Martin Scarry asked, what character would Neil Francis be in Game of Thrones? I was thinking, do you know those old dudes that wouldn't let Sam help your man or... Do you know, Sam had something from the book and they were like...
Citadel.
Those Citadel. Fucking miserable bastards who wouldn't... Well, in my day, we did it like this. That's what I always get off Neil Francis. He kind of has that air of... Things were better when he was involved or something.
Yeah.
But you had one as well, did you?
Me, yeah. The Red Lady one.
Yeah.
Potentially the Red Lady without the necklace.
Way better. Yeah. Way better. Ugh. Now I'm picturing Neil Francis naked. And that's pretty much it. I think we'll leave it at that. Thanks a million for coming on, man. And best of luck for the rest of the season. I think you should probably be our correspondent as well, Game of Thrones. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been off.
Yeah.
I'll be deputy. I'll help Shanners.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get you on around that. Maybe towards the end, the last episode. So, best of luck for the rest of the season.
Cheers, lads. Thanks.
Thanks a million. Thanks to everyone that helped make the show today. Shane, Fiona, Anthony and Pat. Thanks for all your questions, your comments, for listening in all your favourite apps and for watching us on YouTube. This has been Baz and Andrews, House of Rugby, here on Joe, together with Guinness. Party on.
Party on.
You were listening to Baz and Andrews, House of Rugby on Joe. Together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.